ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Cricket Podcast time with your boys, Corbin Middlemass and Ed Cowan, back in the house for your Monday to chop up everything that's going on in the world of cricket. And there's a whole lot. Feels like a noisy off-season, which usually cricket goes a little dormant in these months, but still plenty kicking around in the Australian cricket landscape and more globally, as we know, cricket 12-month of the year sport. My name's Corbin Middlemass. Ed Cowan is in Sydney. Hello, Teddy.
Corby. Welcome to birthday month.
Yeah, this is us.
This is us.
Geminis, come on down. It's all about us.
Playing along for the first time at home. We were born, albeit several years apart, just one day.
Who'd have thought that two Geminis, and if you're big on your star signs, which I'm not, that it would make sense for people. That's what they tell me anyway, that the twins, I think it is, the Gemini setup. So we do have some overlapping interests, and this is one, the sport of cricket, obviously, which we're here to chop up. Is that fair to say? Cricket has, and Todd Greenberg alluded to this, you know, the criticism of Australian cricket has been, you know, it struggles to garner headlines with all the footy codes and everything going on. Feels like that hasn't been a problem so far through the fall or through the autumn, and let's see how we go with as the winter hits.
I mean, I wouldn't say the headlines have been positive contributors around on-field performance. So if that's what it takes to cut through the...
No such thing as bad publicity.
Yeah, there we go. You really are a journalist. I mean, there's plenty going on. Hey, loved your episode last week.
Thank you.
What good talent is Matt Rolla?
He's excellent, isn't he?
That was a great breakdown. Just the way he communicated was beautiful. It's nice to hear that gorgeous kind of English accent, you know, in my ear pods when I was going for a little jog. But, you know, just it was nice. He answered all the questions that you had asked me 2 weeks earlier and I had no answer to. So it was good to actually hear the expert view.
I set it up last week, and I appreciate you listening. And if you haven't had a chance to do so, you can jump back and obviously find it here in the podcast channel. But he's like that first wave of like kid that grew up with T20 cricket. And I was born in 91. He would have been born 5 or 6 years after me. So he was that, and even more so. Like I was probably even in my teenage years by the time T20 cricket really swept through. But yeah, not hostile towards it, understands it, engages with it, is, you know, you can hear in the way that he talks, you know, deeply engaged in the tactics and the way that the game's played and understands it. So to be able to have him on and be able to explain it and break it down for us, I thought it was an excellent overview from him on the themes of the tournament, which I think a lot of Aussie cricket fans, you know, we don't get a chance to watch all the games. There's lots of them. They're in the middle of the night. As a way to just kind of catch you up on, hey, this is what T20 cricket looks like and this is where it's going in the best league in the world.
Yeah, and you know, not to dismiss people from going back and listening that haven't, but there's the must-listen themes that kind of emerged, and we've talked about this a little bit on this podcast before, but the importance of the power play in T20 cricket, and you know, I think it was something like 75% of teams that are leading on runs after the first six overs go on to win the game. Correct me if I'm wrong. So, you know, putting more intentionality around those six overs, because if you're behind in the game, it's so hard to catch up. And then, of course, you know, the recurring themes of teams chasing and how easy it is for them now to pick off runs given the skill set of the modern player. So, you know, it was interesting. He didn't really have an answer to, you know, that question around how can we make it more balanced, and we don't either. But it does feel like, you know, something could happen and the players would then find a way to enact their skills. You know, always constraints is sometimes a good thing. And so, you know, doing away with the toss is obviously an easy suggestion, but are there other things that we can kind of layer into the game? Mm. Because the last thing you need, and it's not like a game of football, unless there's a howling wind at one end, you know, if 60% or a bit more than 60% of teams winning are chasing,
yeah,
you know, that means the toss of the coin is proving, you know, more beneficial to one team than the other. So, you know, that's not a 50-50 probability.
Should you get an extra power play over if you bat first? You know, any of these top things.
That's what it was something actually that might actually, not the obvious idea, maybe it's you get an extra 15 runs. I don't know. You know, like, are you willing to take that risk? Maybe you get an extra wicket. Is there something that you can do to make sure that that closes the gap? Because over long term, players will adjust. But you need games to be close.
Excuse my little hawker moment here as I forward promote something that's coming up on the ABC Cricket Pod. But next week, Adam Voges. We've delivered. I've had lots of people email in, say, hey, I want to hear from Adam Voges on the program. So next week he's going to join me. I will put that question to him. I'll ask him, Teddy, next week about what does he reckon we can do to try and solve the imbalance of the team that that bats second, that seemingly is winning so many games across world cricket. It doesn't matter whether it's international games, you know, IPL, our Big Bash here. It's certainly a common trend at the moment that it certainly favours the side batting second.
And the other thing to emerge that we kind of know anecdotally, but we always had kind of put a line under the team that hits the most boundaries wins T20. That's no longer the case. It's the team that hits the most sixes. And so sixes are now the priority, and that's how teams are setting up. And, you know, just to have someone with the clarity and the stats at their fingertips to present them as clearly and articulately as he did was awesome.
All right, the news out of the IPL last night is that the Royal Challengers Bangalore are still the IPL champions. They defended their title. Of course, they had to wait a long time to be able to break through and win for the first time in their 18th attempt in 2025. Will they back it up the very next year? Kind of like Rory at the Masters. It's amazing that he finally did it and then backs it up immediately. But Virat Kohli, unsurprisingly, fifth half century of the tournament, shows up in the big moment, unbeaten 75. So back-to-back titles with a 5-wicket win over the Gujarat Titans. Titans only made 155, wasn't going to be enough, and RCB chased it down with 12 balls to spare. Venkatesh Iyer, he opened the batting, made quick fire 32 off 16. Tim David made a handy contribution with 24, as he so often does, in a 41-run stand with Virat Kohli. And Josh Hazlewood was the other Australian representative here. He dismissed Shubman Gill in the third over, which is a big wicket. Finished with 2 for 37, Josh, off his four overs. So well done to Josh Hazlewood, Tim David, and the entire RCB organisation as they go back-to-back in the IPL.
Yeah, and, you know, won it effectively away from home. Gujarat played a home final, yeah, despite it being a, you know, independent venue. They were a team that had been bloody hard to beat at that venue and came up trumps. So I do think cohesion plays a big role in T20 cricket, and people understanding their job and their role in those teams. And if you look across the RCB team, it barely changed over the last probably 3 years. And it took, you know, a year to build, a year of learning how to win, and they won the title. And then this year they, you know, under pressure, were too good.
9-5, top of the regular season, as you said, won the major semi, won the whole thing, despite the fact it was a neutral side final, but an away game against Gujarat in Ahmedabad. Vaibhav Suryavanshi, who's I don't know if you can have
been
a break.
I've been looking forward to this conversation.
Can you have a breakout tournament at 15? Well, it feels like he's arrived. So 776 runs. He's the player of the tournament, but he also picked up the Emerging Player Award. So he's not only the rising star, he's also the best of the best in IPL 2026. So led Shubman Gill, Sai Siddharthan, and Virat Kohli as the next three on the run scorers list, but led every player in the competition at 15. I mean, we knew he was coming, but holy smokes, what a way to arrive in the biggest T20 tournament in the world.
Yeah, and the purple cap, I think it is it, for the most runs? Were we early adopters when he smacked the Aussie 19s around maybe 3 years ago and we were like, ooh, he's a kid. He can put that emerging player little trophy, go pick that up, put that one in the bin. He won't look at that ever again, because is this kid going to be the Don Bradman of T20 cricket? I've never seen anything like it. I mean, let's park his age. I actually don't care how old he is. I care how dominant he is. The volume of sixes, did he break the tournament record? Or that's still held by Chris Gayle and he fell maybe three short. And so the way he goes about his cricket, and I watch him bat and I think, oh, it's like Brian Lara on steroids. This is what Brian Lara would have batted like in T20 cricket if he'd grown up playing the format. You know, the big high back lift, very wristy. But the balls just fly at a trajectory that it's actually hard to fathom. You know, like he'll hit balls, they look almost vertical, and you look up and they're in the top tier of the stadium. Mm. So little, and he hits it so hard. I don't know, it's so hard to fathom. And he's so dominant. It's kind of hard to get a gauge of where the sky is for this kid. He's box office. Like, yeah. Total, forget, again, don't care how old he is, don't care where he's from. If he's batting, you have to be watching.
Yeah, it's a great thing for cricket. There's no doubt about it. I mean, Test cricket nowadays is different to what Test cricket was, you know, 10 years ago or whatever. Does it translate, like, from what you see from him? Is that going to work in the Test arena?
Well, I'd like to see it.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw him play that. I mean, the 100 he got against the Aussie 19s. I know it was kids first at that point. Mm. Prepubescent kid. He was like 7. Yeah. But that was a white clothed fixture, rather, and he got 180 off 90 balls. You know, like some may even argue that it's easier. You know, in India when the wickets are good, yes, the ball's moving a little bit, but you know, the field's up and away you go. We've seen Sehwag, Warner, Gale, you know, Chris Gale, maybe the previous greatest T20 player of all time, had Test triple hundreds. Like, he was a very dominant Test batter, so why not? I don't think just yet. I don't think it's too far away. I mean, he doesn't play in the Indian T20 team yet. Doesn't play in the white ball 50-over team yet. So, you know, get him in there and understanding the pressures of international cricket. But my goodness, is it something?
Clock's ticking. Hurry up. It's time to see him in the international arena. Declan Byrne, who's a producer, researcher, fills in all the blanks for us. He actually broke Chris Gale's record. So 72 sixes. He's got that record. So most in a single tournament.
With one to go, he needed 4.
Amazing.
Maybe that was sitting in my head. I mean, I quite like the fact that he won a car.
Yeah.
He can't drive yet.
It feels over, doesn't it? You think that all of a sudden this guy comes, he's like a cheat code. It's amazing that...
he's playing stick cricket.
Yeah.
Did you ever play stick cricket on your mobile?
Absolutely.
That's him.
Yeah.
That's all, he walks out, doesn't matter if it's ball one, ball 29 when he's 100, who cares? He's literally trying to hit a six every ball.
Yeah. They got the purple cap. They should dress him in yellow, like Jackie Chan at the end of the movie. He's just unlocked everything. He's finished it. The game of cricket's over, and he's here to take over. Incredible campaign, and really that'll be the major talking point and memory, I'm sure, out of this year's IPL. The OD, speaking of white ball bilateral cricket, which we're big fans of.
It's a good segue, Corb. You haven't lost your touch since I've been having a little nap.
We played again against Pakistan. We lost again as the struggled against the spinners on the dry turning decks. So the Aussie batters undone there. 5-wicket loss in Rawalpindi in the series opener. Sent in all out 200 in the 45th over. Each of the specialist batsmen, all 7 of them, dismissed by the slow bowlers. So Pakistan debutant Arafat Minhas took 5 for 32 from his 10 overs. He got the wickets of Inglis, Green and Marnus in the middle when the Aussies had a mini collapse of 3 for 6. All told, they lost 4 for 68. And in the 16th over, they were all of a sudden staring down the barrel. It was pretty tough work from there. Matt Short made a half century and Matt Renshaw top scored with 61. That meant Cam Green missed out. Manus Labuschagne missed out. Ollie Peake became the youngest specialised batsman ever for Australia in ODI cricket. Younger than Ricky Ponting and the 4th youngest all time. They all missed out with the bat. And then with the ball, they weren't able to restrict Pakistan. So as a result, a 5-wicket loss in the first game. What were your major takeaways, Teddy?
I mean, no surprises here. Aussies get spun out by left-arm spinner in off-season. There's a headline you cut and paste every May to September. But in this case, you know, having watched a little bit of the highlights, the ball wasn't really turning. It was a pretty good batting track. And is often the case, it's the straight one that is the undoing. You know, Inglis, tried to reverse sweep a straight one. Marnus went back to a full straight one. You know, it just kind of looked as though a few players, I mean, Inglis obviously been doing quite well in the IPL, a few players were out of sorts, as in game sense-wise, and it's bloody hard to get back into it. So 50 over cricket, eh? Don't we love it? I mean, I like this development style that Australian selectors have adopted for these kind of tours. Let's have a look at these guys. Let's see how they play. We've got Matt Short off a state contract. You know, so this is he's at least playing for something. He's going to be judged by his performances, essentially playing for Australia now rather than, you know, domestic cricket. So franchise cricket and international cricket. So you go, there's a little bit at stake here. It's hard to get really excited for 50 over cricket in, you know, late May. But if Australia doesn't beat Pakistan, is it the end of the world? I mean, it's not ideal. Pakistan have been pretty weak in this format. But, you know, it's a start of a long journey to the next World Cup.
Matt Renshaw said afterwards, we got undone by the conditions. Said two different conditions out there, dew set in. So that was his explanation around a bit of that. Might explain why they struggled with the ball, perhaps less so with the stick. Billy Stanley played his first international since 2019. I didn't realise it had been so long. So none for 37 off his six overs. And Tanvir Sanger got a start, one for 31 off 10. Adam Zampa was a laid out here with neck spasms. So there was a very different looking Australian team. Obviously no Head, no Marsh, and the big three, Cummins, Stark and Hazelwood, all absent as well.
Yeah, I mean, the big three don't turn up for white ball cricket unless it's a World Cup. So, you know, park those. It's just more, what are the bones of the team going forward, you know, in between times?
Yeah.
So, again, like, it's great to see Billy Stanlake fit and playing, you know. But is a Stanlake and a Spencer Johnson, is that the future? You know, Marley Beardman, we got to start blooding these players, and there's no better place to do it. You don't learn how to play spin or slow bowling in 50 over cricket by not playing it. So let's get stuck in.
Have you got your all-time ODI 10 that someone asked you for
I could give you one.
Okay, stand by for that. Just Cam Green, by the way, hasn't reached a 50 in his last 15 international innings. So again, it's just another innings for him that adds to that stat, which obviously gets read out frequently.
Geez, you've turned it. Last week, you're bloody saying that everybody gets a hard time and his IPL numbers have been good, and here you are, you know, that's what you lead with.
But it's more like if he was, say, he scored runs here, even though it happens in the middle of the night, they can't say that anymore. They can't say it's, you know, 15 innings without a score. And then Manus Labuschagne, this sort of snuck up on me a little bit too. So averaging 21 across format since the beginning of 2025. In ODI cricket across his last 14 matches, averages a dozen.
So I don't know how he has worked his way back into the team. Like, this, let's just go back a step. And I don't really, you know, want to get into selection brouhahas on the 1st of June. But this is someone who struggled in one-day cricket, had struggled in test cricket, got dropped from the test team, dominated the domestic 50-over game.
Yep.
But that is so far away from international cricket. You know, the state teams for 7 games a year, and he's playing at Allan Border Field for half of them. And so can you look through that and say he's actually in our best 11 or best 22 in this case? I mean, we know what a high-quality batter he is. Are we not better off trying to blood someone else in a series like this? I mean, it's probably a toss of the coin. Maybe, you know, some runs leading into the winter test series.
He's available.
He's not.
There's a lot of guys that aren't.
Yeah, I mean, it is a name that just keeps popping up in 50-over cricket, and you always think, oh, is he? Is he there? And then he'll, you know, do something or not do something, and we end up talking about it endlessly.
Mm. Nice to see Ollie Peake there, though, isn't it? So
love that. Great selection.
So only Cummins, Hazelwood and Horace younger ever to debut for Australia. So younger than Ricky Ponty at 19. If you're keen on this, second ODI Tuesday night, 9:30 p.m. Eastern. Australia have not won a bilateral series in Pakistan since 1998, which sounds dramatic, but how many have we played really in that last 30 years or so, given there's been such little cricket in Pakistan in that time? Third game's on Thursday, and then there's 3 ODIs and 3 T20s against Bangladesh to follow, and a few more reinforcements come back in then. The guys back from the IPL, and so the team gets a little stronger by the time we get to Bangladesh. A couple of other matters I'm keen to pick up with you, Teddy. So I don't know if you caught this story, but do you want to do your ODI team?
Oh, yeah, why not?
Hit me.
So I didn't know if the question was like an all-time world 11 or an all-time
best 10. Which one have you prepared for? We'll take that one.
I can do either.
Okay.
On my head. Have you done something similar, or is this just...
No, this is all you.
Oh, this is kind of boring then.
Yeah.
You just get to pick holes in,
correct,
in my team.
that's how selecting works. Haven't you been following along?
Hey, I'll just put my George Bailey hat on. You ready? And then you can put your Ed Cowan hat on and slay me. Yeah, exactly. And we can argue about it. Okay. The 50-over cricket has changed so much since the advent of T20. So it's almost like pre-T20 is a different game to now. But I've tried to wrap them all in. So, opening the batting.
Mm-hmm.
Rohit Sharma and Adam Gilchrist.
Ooh.
Any issues?
Gilly has to be there for sure. So, yep, no drummers with any of that. And then Rohit's going to be pretty hard to keep out.
King Kohli at 3.
Yep.
AB de Villiers at 4.
Yep.
Here's a blast from the past. Sir Vivian Richards at number 5.
Okay.
I mean, stats will back this up.
Yeah, I didn't say a lot of Viv, but...
Well, I mean, me either, but wow.
Are we missing someone? All of a sudden
Michael
we're down...
Michael Bevan at 6.
Yeah, no, just so... Yeah, okay.
Shaqib at 7.
Wow, yep.
I mean, the greatest white ball all-rounder probably the world has known, minus a little 2-year ban in there, but...
Yeah. So what? All of a sudden, what, you're going to have Tendulkar at 8 or something?
No, not playing.
He's not. Wow.
Okay. Warn.
Warn. Ponting at 9?
No. Stark, Bumrah, McGrath. There you go.
Stark, Bumrah, McGrath. There's a few omissions here. Yeah. So no Kumar Sangakkara?
Nope.
No Sachin Tendulkar, the all-time leading run scorer by about 4,000 runs.
Yeah, because he played 5 million more games than anyone.
Okay. Jacques Callis can't get a look in?
No. Where are you picking him?
How did Rohit all of a sudden late frog a bunch of these guys?
I think Rohit probably the set behind Kohli. I reckon
ninth all-time leading run scorer.
There you go.
There's no Brian Lara.
No Brian Lara.
No MS Dhoni.
No MS Dhoni.
Right.
ChatGPT has made your life very easy. They all have a case to make, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe... I mean, Callis has to bat in the top 3, but Kohli has to bat 3. I mean, Kohli de Villiers, I think, is... That's set.
What about... Was him? Do you look at him?
Yeah, I'm taking Stark.
I thought was him Akram?
Yeah. Mitch Stark, greatest white ball player ever. Oh, sorry, white ball bowler.
Okay. Mattia?
Warnie.
Yeah, I think most of us down here are going to have Warnie on top. Stark, I understand. You couldn't have had 2 left armers?
Well, I thought about that, but I like balance. Like, no. Do you want my Aussie team? I mean, obviously.
I feel like this is it.
I mean, so, this was 5 minutes.
I think Rohit's generous. He would. I don't like picking holes in things where I feel like if you're going to put one in, you got
265. I think multiple double hundreds.
Yeah, if you put one in, you got to take one out. So. I mean, obviously, we got a bias down here for punter, but...
Someone has to open the batting. So you're saying Tendulkar's going to open the batting in your team. It's a pretty good replacement.
Yeah, any one of them.
What did Sachin strike at? Ask your little AI agent.
Sachin striked at 86.
Boring. At 86. See? Yeah. Boring. Not getting picked.
Yeah.
Sorry. What's Rohit? 91 or something?
I'm looking for Viv Richards.
at 90. Give me 43 at 90 or something. Okay. Back in the day when, you know, the boundaries were bloody... Yeah. SCG boundary rope was in Moore Park somewhere.
What do you reckon Michael Bevan struck at?
85, probably.
74.
Yeah, but... my childhood bias.
What about Brenda Saywag? He struck it over 100 back before that was a thing.
I'm going to give him my Aussie team. We're going to move.
Go on. Yep, fair enough.
Gilchrist, Warner, Ponting, Smith... Hussey, Bevan, Simons, Warne, McGrath, Stark, Sean Tate.
Oh, the wild thing.
The wild thing.
Yeah, that's something I can get enthusiastic about. I'm happy with that. There you go. That answers one of your queries about Teddy's best ODI teams. And I'm sure people will be debating that as we work our way through. All right, sharp transition, serious topic. Cricket Australia dismissing a senior staffer following an independent investigation into a whistleblower allegation. Which basically uncovered that the employee awarded more than $600,000 in contracts to an outside company that the said staffer was directly affiliated with. Now, the investigation led to the staffer's immediate termination, and as a result, there's obviously heightened scrutiny over the internal governance at Cricket Australia, or at least that's what's been written in their reports. But this was an extraordinary story. I'm surprised it didn't sort of garner more headlines than what it did, but essentially the staffer that was there at Cricket Australia is no longer there. Previously working at the NRL that have now come across to Cricket Australia and now departing Cricket Australia. But for everything that's going on at head office at the moment, this is a very untimely story.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know what to add here, aside from I was a little shocked that it initially was broken by some independent kind of blogger that thankfully got picked up by Gideon, who kind of really gave it some legs. And you never know with these things if the outcome would have been the same if there wasn't some kind of press coverage. And so, you know, a lot of the story was around a lot of the department had been sacked over that period of time. They were disgruntled. This executive, he wasn't a staffer. He was, a senior member of the team, had done some pretty untoward things. So, you know, glad that whistleblowers exist and they've had the courage to speak up. I think I read a comment from Todd saying, you know, we thank said person for their contribution. I don't know if that's all that appropriate, but who knows? I just don't know anything about the story aside from what I've read in a few articles here or there.
I mean, you have probably asked the question as much as anyone, but certainly the question is being asked from state land and from various portions of Australian cricket as to, while CA are trying to make the case that, hey, we need to go down the privatisation route because we need more money in the game and, you know, we need to do all this about, you know, can Cricket Australia run its own business better? And CA essentially saying, yeah, we get all that, but what we want to do is we need to get more money in and we need to do this and that. And it almost feels like it's skipping over the question somewhat as to whether there needs to be an internal governance review. And then all of a sudden there's a story like this that pops up where you think this couldn't be worse time where it's, you know, we're out essentially shopping, hoping to try and sell parts of our assets, which we have in Australian cricket at the moment. We're trying to shop them to get some money for it and sell off part of what cricket owns. And yet there's problems sort of inside the tent that haven't been addressed or that are emerging that are only being addressed now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very reasonable view to have. I mean, the only thing that kind of comes to mind is Todd has a very tough job. You know, he's not just running the business operationally, but he's also managing stakeholders between the state CEOs and chair people and boards and, you know, other CEOs of other international boards. And so it kind of speaks to, you know, an oversight like this, whether he actually needs like a chief operating officer or someone who's in the nitty gritty detail of operating the business and supporting the business on a day-to-day basis, because you can't do it all as a CEO. And, you know, hopefully it kind of spurs some thoughts around what the best structure of their team looks like going forward.
Where's it at, Teddy? What's happening with privatisation of the game? It feels like it's gone very quiet, which...
Yeah, I'm in the dark a little bit, Corb. I've only got what I'm reading, and the last I read was around this kind of mixed public-private model where I think they're calling it self-determination mode, where states can, you know,
sounds like the end of a video game,
and they can sell, or so at the moment what I'm reading is they can sell now, they can sell in the future. If they sell in the future, they essentially pay a tax and it impacts their distributions. And so without any detail, I'm kind of loath to comment, but
okay.
I think a couple of weeks ago we talked through this. It's,
you know, and that's you saying you don't know. That's not you saying, hey, I know more but I can't tell you.
No, that's my I literally have no idea. I would love to know more.
Yeah, because my thought was in the fight game in boxing, basically what happens is people come out and they call each other out publicly. We always see how that plays out very theatrically. And then all of a sudden when all the tension builds before this big prize fight, it goes incredibly quiet. And then there's no talk for like 2 weeks. And what essentially is happening then, instead of them talking to each other publicly, or calling each other out publicly, talking to the press, they start talking to each other and they start, you know, getting a contract signed and working it out, and then there's the official announcement. That's what I assumed was going on, that I thought this has gone so quiet that maybe we're getting very close to an announcement because they must be chatting behind the scenes to one another. But you're saying, hey, that's not necessarily the case.
I think the emptiness of comms is more Cricket Australia trying to be clear on what the flow through impact of a model like that is. I mean, yep. You don't read about these things unless they're getting close to being presented and they're being reported by reputable sources. So I'll know more when I know more.
Mm. It's the only thing that concerns me about it is the states that really need the money that, like, have they been banking on this so much so that they haven't been organising, you know, other possible revenue streams to think that if this doesn't happen, what's it going to look like for WA and Victoria and these kind of states that are...
Well, why do they really need the money? That's what I'm not...
Well, you were saying that expensive swimming pool, for example, is weighing on Western Australia.
So there's some debt there, but I'm just interested as to what that money over and above the distributions that they currently get.
We'll see. One thing that is sort of looks destined for the Big Bash is what I'm trying to segue into, is a game in India. So we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago. The report came through from India, by the way, that the BCCI had greenlit Cricket Australia to launch their season in the subcontinent. So Chennai is going to be the location in mid-December. It still needs government approval, but the Scorchers, the Thunder and the Renegades have been the three front runners that have been linked to this game. Five members of the CA delegation attended a IPL game recently at the venue to do a little recce and scope things out. Now, here's a little kicker. At this time of the year, Chennai is prone to flooding because it's the end of the monsoon season, which I thought...
You beat me to the punchline. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. My initial thought was... I get it's a great idea, but are we running a little bit of a risk here thinking we're going to stage a game in India and have this huge event and know that there's a pretty good chance that this whole thing could get washed out before a ball's bowled?
I mean, you fly two teams over from Australia for, I don't know, 72 hours to India. You would probably want that to be guaranteed that was going to take place. Is Chennai the spot? Like, I fly an extra 4 hours north, and then I guess you hit winter. Oh, I mean, it's beyond me. But do you like the idea?
I was chatting to a few of the broadcasters about it. It's going to be an expensive operation for them. Like, imagine if you're Seven and Fox or whatever. They haven't been budgeting to do up a game in India. So then who do you reckon is going to fund that? Because the broadcasters will go back to Cricket Australia and say, hey, guys, if you're going to do this, you're going to need to help us out with this. And that's just not
the government would be chipping in, no?
The Australian government?
Yeah.
Right.
What? I don't know. You know,
what's in it for them?
Improved Indian relations. I don't know. For a business, someone has to. It can't be Cricket Australia that's paying for it. Again, don't know.
Yeah.
Don't have the details. I don't know why teams are lining up for that. Like, why would you either give away a home game?
Yeah. So one team has to do that.
And deal with the jet lag, and for the purpose of not knowing that you're getting a game in foreign conditions, it's like it feels a bit Mickey Mouse to me.
Mm.
No,
it's yeah.
You know what sounds what it smells like, and this is the cynic in me, is they just want to line up the buyers. Come the old dog and pony show.
Yeah,
come try before you buy.
Yeah, I think
see what their colours look like.
Yeah, there's definitely got to be a little bit of that. I mean, it's interesting that the Scorchers are one of the teams that have been put forward, where it feels like they've got their hand pretty high in the air for private investment and whatever it looks like. But I don't know. It just sort of stinks of like the, you know, hey, Volandis did this with the Las Vegas. Let's go and play a game in some other part of the world to start the tournament.
Very different market. We're talking about going to a cricket market, but
I
don't mind the concept, but the overhang around the weather and the monsoon, surely goes in the too hard basket. Mm. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a few hoops I still need to jump through. Is Andrew Flintoff going to coach the Thunder?
Don't know. What have you been reading?
I read a report that he's now the front runner, but I did say Michael Hussey was the front runner, which he was, but that deal obviously fell through and ultimately... that they couldn't get it over the line. So they're still searching the Thunder. Obviously, Hussey was their first priority. Couldn't get that to happen. And Andrew Flintoff's Big name.
It's a big name. Yeah. I think if he signs, as is being reported, then that would be exciting, wouldn't it? Good for the game.
I wonder if the Cricket New South Wales board would have approved it and said, oh, that's a good idea. If only I knew someone
that
sat on the board.
If only
I knew someone that was on the board. The Women's World Cup, by the way, you can catch that through ABC Listen. So we're going to carry the BBC coverage. You'll be able to hear every ball of the tournament, June 12 to July 5. I think it's the biggest World Cup that's happening, isn't it, in the month of June? So the Women's T20 World Cup, there's no other World Cup I can think of that's going on. So the Netherlands are going to be part of the tournament. It's the first time they've participated in a Women's World Cup of any kind since the year 2000. So 12-team tournament, up from 10, two pools of six. You play the other five teams in your pool. Top two teams make it to the semi-final stage, and then we get a final thereafter. Both the semis are at the Oval, and the final, of course, naturally, is at Lord's. So good luck to the Aussie women involved there. Teams in our pool, Ed.
This is a big tournament for a team that hasn't pulled in any major trophy in the last, how long, 3 years?
Yeah.
4 years? This is line in the sand stuff, I think, for the program, isn't it?
They are about to find themselves in a really unenviable spot, if not already, like the Australian Diamonds. Remember, the Diamonds would win everything all year round, would never win like the Commonwealth Games gold and the World Cup. And you think, at the end of the day, you got to get it done when it matters most. Like that. Unfortunately, the way these and Australian cricket's got a great history in this, where they go to major tournaments and they're successful, and whatever happens in between gets forgotten. But if you don't actually collect the major titles, you kind of think, to what end if you're the number one team in the world? And I saw Shelley Nitschke was re-signed for 3 years, which I was a little surprised, to be honest, at the timing of that and how that all came about, particularly with the World Cup now. Like, why wouldn't you just wait another 3 months, see what this World Cup looks like? All of a sudden, if you know you go to three World Cups and you come away with nothing, then maybe you're having a different conversation. But fair play, good luck to her. She's got a new 3-year deal, and good luck to the Aussie women. Was that your read?
That is my read. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I'm actually looking forward to this. Great time zone.
Yep.
We can watch a bit in the morning when you get up. Day-night cricket.
And, of course, all available through ABC Listen if you want to put it on as you fall asleep at night. Listener questions, Teddy. You can get in touch, ABC Cricket Podcast at abc.net.au. We got a lot of questions here. And then my problem is I've got to read them for the first time when we're on air and then try and decipher them as best we can. All right, from Pat, I've really enjoyed your conversation so far of the myriad issues surrounding the BBL privatisation push. The main thing that irks me is that they're selling the league to fix it instead of fixing the league to sell it. Fix issues like the lack of quality overseas players, franchises needing a rebrand, move the window, make the centrally contracted players play. Do you agree that this needs fixing before we sell? From Pat.
Smells like a comment dressed up as a question there, Corbin.
Which we love. We're big on that too.
Just to be clear, we do appreciate people writing in with their views, and they get to read them out. I mean, Pat, as a long-time listener, no doubt would have heard that argument rolled out, I don't know, no less than 55 times in the last 24 months. So, yes, Pat, we agree with you.
It's like if you're going to sell your house, you may as well give it a coat of paint and fix the broken cupboard and so on and so forth that you've lived with for 8 years, but you think, oh, we got to put it on the market. Let's go and do something to make it look a little better. Fix the blinds. Greg and Benalla. Worked as an administrator in country cricket in Victoria for over 40 years. In the last 2 years, in meetings with Nick Cummins and other Cricket Victoria leaders, they were talking about the Stars and no mention of the Renegades. Do you think that they have been keen to offload this team for a while? Secondly, do you think that Australian cricket will start to look like the A-League, where promising young players go overseas for development and opportunities?
First part of the question, I mean, you get that sense. I don't know for fact, but you certainly get the sense that the Stars is their marquee asset and the Renegades, given the financial profile and the trouble they have at the stadium there, no doubt.
But did you read the story about the Stars potentially rebranding to the Bushrangers before the sale?
I have read that. I think not to sell. I think the idea was you rebrand it and keep it.
Yeah.
Under some self-determination model. Anyway, I don't. Again, it's speculation.
It's also
second part of the question. That is a genuine risk. If the Big Bash isn't I think that's like the downside case is, for whatever reason, the Big Bash doesn't get the investment it needs, and the best players leave, and then all of a sudden, You know, it does look like the A-League. The other side of that kind of trade a little bit, you know, is you do get the investment and the IPL teams come and own these franchises and they just treat it like a talent farm. And so while they may play in the Big Bash, they may not, you know, and who knows what those protections look like. So our players are both here and abroad and not being controlled by Cricket Australia at all. So who knows?
It's good reporting the Bush Rangers thing, to be honest. That's the part I'm more interested in talking about. Because, like, if you're Cricket Victoria, they wouldn't have wanted that out, surely. Like, that if they are, like, that's not a great story for them to come out. Because
why is that?
Like, one, you could say, oh, they're trying to improve public sentiment because they're trying to appeal to people in Victoria and cricket fans like me that, you know, grew up with the mascot names, you know, back in the old state league competition. But, like, at some point, they're going to have to put the Renegades on the market and say, hey, come buy the Renegades. They're a great team to get involved in, and you should spend as much money as you can because it's a great buy. And then they're also saying, hey, everybody, come back over here and barrack for the Stars. The Victorian team's over here. We're called the Bush Rangers. Don't worry about that red team over there, the Renegades. Why would you possibly want to support them? So if I'm buying the Renegades, why would I want to purchase that? You're basically saying, hey, we're going to make one the state team, and then I'm going to have this weird outlier team called the Sunrisers or the Elephants or something, and all of a sudden I'm going to have to try and sell them to somebody.
Well, I think that's the point. I think it becomes a delineation.
Correct.
Of IPL team, home team.
Correct.
Do your best.
And what they think someone's silly enough to come along and say, oh, great, now we're going to buy this team, it's going to have no supporters. Tim from the Shire, could you ever see a world where we privatise the Sheffield Shield, a first-class version of the IPL? I'm sure purists will be offended, but with less nations prioritising red ball cricket, we could attract overseas players to the comp.
I mean, that could be a Batuta Advocate little headline. Cricket Australia plans to privatise Sheffield Shield. That would, I mean, no. Unfortunately, I feel like it's a bit tongue-in-cheek and I love it.
I think the problem is that no one's watching it. I think that's the issue that we got to the red ball cricket. As much as we talk about it and our community here and everyone that listens to this pod loves red ball cricket, I guarantee you as much, if everyone that said they loved it and watched it, if they were watching it, would be in a much healthier place. But the problem is, it's, what's that Neil Danaher line about when all is said and done, more is said than done? And unfortunately, that's what happens when it comes to the red ball cricket globally. Ashley says, decision review system question. Should there be a penalty for asking for a review that ultimately proves the umpire right, especially in T20 cricket where it stops the flow of the game? Make sure there's a price to pay so they don't just roll the dice.
Well, don't mind it.
But isn't the price to pay that you lose your review?
Yeah, I mean,
is that not enough of a price to pay?
I guess there's a bigger issue around T20 cricket being slowed down too much, you know, for a game that's meant to be done and dusted originally in 3 hours, it's dragged 4.5 in some cases. And so how can we make sure that the game keeps moving? But one review per team, I think there's, you know, you could live with that.
John from Malvern. Firstly, Cam Green, do you think the Indian media is harsh on Cam Green because he's an overseas player? Secondly, why are Cricket Australia in a rush for privatisation? Do you know? Shouldn't we watch the live case studies of the SA T20 and the 100.
I don't know why the Indian media are harsh on Cameron Green. I don't read it. And as a, you know, avid listener, no doubt he has an answer to the second part.
The second part, John, there's about 10 episodes in this channel 10? Where you can go back and...
I reckon. just start with the back catalogue.
Teddy will be with you there. Yeah, not so much the media. We talk about it like we're, you know, one big family that all lives in the same house like the Smurfs, but that's not the case as the media. But I would argue he almost cops more criticism from the local cricket fans, like Australian cricket fans, than he does just about anywhere else in the world. There was focus on him when he first went over there because he wasn't bowling, and I can understand that if I'm paying $4 million for an asset and he rolls up and says, oh, by the way, you know, my boss back home said I wasn't able to bowl, I'll be thinking, hang on, that's not what I bought at the auction. Ellie.
If people have made it 55 minutes into this,
this is a real treat, isn't it?
It's absolute a Corbin middle mass masterclass. The Smurfs. Where did that come from?
I'm on the end of being two hours recording. It's a little ragged towards the back end. Yeah, a couple of times.
Okay.
A couple of times. Ellie from the Adelaide Hills. What are the chances we see Rashid Khan back in the BBL? He's been bowling well for the Titans in the IPL.
Well, wouldn't we love that? Unfortunately, I think between money dressed up as a personal boycott, I think the chances are pretty low.
Yep. So he's plays in the SA20, doesn't he, at the same time? Right. I think he's the captain of a team over there.
Yeah, but you remember, just to walk back, when Australia refused to play Afghanistan, he kind of used that as the leverage.
That's not the reason.
What's the reason?
The reason is that he's probably getting paid more money to go on.
100%. Sorry, I thought you were...
No. James, lastly, here at last with our listener questions, of course you can email us, just repeating ABC Cricket Podcast at abc.net.au. Saw that the BBL salary cap rates quite well against all T20 comps except the IPL. Should we reduce the state players' money so that we can pay the internationals more and get the bigger names?
We can do a mini deep dive, last question of the day. So on a median basis, the answer is yes, it pays quite well. The top players get paid less and the bottom players get paid more. And so we've talked about this before, can you redistribute it so that your best players get paid more? But we don't want that to be to B-grade overseas talent. We either need the box office, and that tends to be Indian, really, in T20 cricket. There are obviously a short list of maybe 10 others that you'd want. Some play, some don't. At the moment, we've got the C-grade celebrities. But I'd rather pay our best Australian talent, your Cummins, your Smiths, your Starks, your Hazelwoods, to play more Big Bash cricket, and incentivise them. They're the names that we want to see. And so how do we do that? So let's pay our best talent more. And if it means, I don't know, there's lots of naysayers here, if that means that you pay your lesser talent less, I think we're better off.
Yep, same pool, distribute it differently. That's us done. Send your questions and your comments, by the way. You can send them through as well, and Teddy will passive-aggressively respond to them at ABC Cricket Podcast at abc.net.au in a fortnight when he joins me again on the ABC Cricket Podcast. Adam Voges is in your seat next week, Teddy, so looking forward to that. Have a great fortnight off, and we'll chop it up all again and see if we got any more for you in the cricketing world in a fortnight.
Thanks, Corb. Can't wait to listen to the Adam Voges. What are you going to ask him?
I might ask him that, just what we spoke about then. Do you reckon he'd be willing to make the sacrifice of either the test matches in the glamour window or the BBL window to get our best players playing?
Okay. Good question.
I'll put that to him. See what
he
says.
Can you make a note of this? Can you ask him why Teague Wiley's leaving WA?
I don't know whether I'll get that one in or not. We'll see how we go. You'll have to listen next week.
I'll listen.
I'm just thinking about what next week I'm going to ask, and I don't think I'm going to ask that. But we'll see. We'll see what comes out next Monday. Appreciate it, Teddy. I'll chat to you on a fortnight.
Later.